Thank you very much. It is 6 minutes past the hour, and it is my pleasure to welcome back to the Hurley in the Morning program. And we've known each other for a long time. He's still very young, but somehow the math doesn't seem like it works. But we've known each other for a number of decades. Dr. Rafael Corbaciero, he is a cardiac electrophysiologist. And as I've been mentioning throughout the morning, the director of electrophysiology and pacing at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. Dr. Corbaciero earned his medical degree from New York Medical College after medical school. He completed his residency in internal medicine, fellowship training in both cardiology and interventional cardiology at Westchester Medical Center in Valhalla, New York. He went on to complete his fellowship in clinical cardiac electrophysiology at Bay State Medical Center in Springfield, Massachusetts. Dr. C's special interests include device therapy, pacemakers, defibrillators, resynchronization therapy, heart failure therapy, and a complex ablation. He has participated in many clinical research projects and authored numerous articles in peer-reviewed medical journals. And our topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents is atrial fibrillation. Dr. C, welcome back, my friend.
Hi. Good morning, Harry. Good to see you.
It is good to see you, and let's get right into it. A lot of our listeners have heard this called AFib, atrial fibrillation. So if we go back and forth, ladies and gentlemen, on that, we're talking about the same thing. What is atrial fibrillation?
So atrial fibrillation is an abnormal heart rhythm that it originates from the top part of the heart. So electrically speaking, the heart has two signals that work in sequence, top to bottom. What happens in atrial fibrillation is the top signal is knocked out of control, and instead of having a signal that coordinates the top part of the heart to beat, it becomes electrical chaos. So instead of beating, the top part is just quivering and not working in sync with the bottom part anymore.
So in terms of what happens within the heart during AFib, I think you just mentioned, but just to further drill down on this, what are the different stages?
So atrial fibrillation comes, sort of from a beginning to an end. When it starts, usually you have what's called paroxysms of AFib. The episodes will come and go. Some people feel them, some people don't. But that's the paroxysmal atrial fibrillation. If it's untreated or progresses, it gets to the point where it becomes what we call permanent atrial fibrillation, and you're in atrial fibrillation all the time.
And could you be in it all the time and not know it? Or you would know it at that point?
No, the symptoms of atrial fibrillation can be very, very subtle. Some patients don't know that they have it at all and are only told about it when they go for a doctor's visit or they go for a procedure or, something like that. Whereas other people feel every single episode. So it's very subjective.
Does AFib and palpitations have any, are they synonymous with one another or completely different events?
No, they're not synonymous. People can have palpitations, which are the sensation of feeling, sort of skip beats in your chest, the heart not beating quite right. But atrial fibrillation is only one of the reasons why you might have palpitations. There are other reasons why people might feel palpitations or abnormal skip beats. But one of them might be atrial fibrillation.
Two-part question, Dr. C. And if you're just joining the program, Deborah Heart and Lung Center, presenting Dr. Rafael Corbaciero, Director of Electrophysiology and Pacing at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. And today's topic is atrial fibrillation. What are the symptoms of AFib? And the second part of the question, the risk factors.
So again, the symptoms can be quite varied. Some people have no symptoms at all, whereas the other end of the spectrum, some people cannot function with atrial fibrillation. Their heart's not working right. They're very weak, tired, short of breath, things like that. Now, the thing about atrial fibrillation is sometimes it can be very subtle. I've had patients who come in who, they just say that, the common complaint is, I'm feeling old, I'm slowing down. And when you make the diagnosis of atrial fibrillation and correct it, all of a sudden, they don't feel so old. They don't feel so tired. So it can be very subtle.
And progresses over time?
It can. It can. If left untreated, it will progress and usually get worse.
I know from knowing you for such a long period of time, one of the things you're very famous for is your aggressive early approach. So obviously early detection would be very, very good in something like this, correct?
Yes, yes. In this day and age, too, I mean, you know, with all the technology that we have, you know, we're much better at diagnosing and following atrial fibrillation. You know, now we have, you know, the Apple Watch that has an AFib monitor on it. We have devices that we can put on our phone to check our rhythm all the time. You see the commercials for the Cardia device where you can check yourself all the time. So, yes, I'm a big proponent of making the diagnosis early and treating it aggressively, much the same way we would treat other things. You know, the earlier we get to a problem, you know, the better the long-term outcome. So in this day and age, you know, it's not like 10, 20 years ago where cardiologists would diagnose AFib and say, well, it's not the worst problem in the world. We'll just not be aggressive with it. Now, with what we have to treat it, which we'll talk about later, you know, we can halt the progress of atrial fibrillation if we treat it earlier.
Is atrial fibrillation curable or treatable?
It's treatable, but I wouldn't say that it is curable. So the analogy that I give is if you're diagnosed with high blood pressure or if you're diagnosed with diabetes, that's your diagnosis. Now, if we treat it aggressively, it should not cause, you know, the problems that it would cause if we don't treat it aggressively.
Great answer. Is there a gender difference in AFib?
The general feeling is that, you know, men have more atrial fibrillation than women. That's the general consensus. Although there are some papers out there that sort of corrected for certain factors. One paper was quite, kind of interesting. If they corrected for the height of the patient, it turns out that women and men have the same incidence of atrial fibrillation.
As you know, Dr. C, I've done advanced studies in palpitations under the University of Corbusiero, and I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about it. Palpitations can very oftentimes be driven if you have added stress, if you have a lack of sleep, and things like that. Is AFib similar to that? If you get good sleep, if you manage your stress well, can you keep it at bay? Or is that a palpitations sort of diagnosis that I just gave that is different than AFib?
No, you're absolutely correct. It has the same effects on atrial fibrillation as it does on palpitations. You know, the way I explain this is, you know, some people have the propensity for palpitations or atrial fibrillation. So there's something in there that can be triggered. And then there are the triggers that come out. One of the biggest triggers to rhythm disturbances, whether it's atrial fibrillation or palpitations, is stress. The other biggest, you know, factor is sleep. A lot of people with not enough sleep or sleep apnea, that contributes to these things, as well as some other stuff.
For those wondering, like, what does it mean? Like, people say, oh, my God, you know, my heart goes out, or what's this atrial fibrillation? How does AFib increase the chance of stroke and heart failure?
So two-part question. So if you're in the atrial fibrillation, as I said, the top part of the heart is quivering. So it's not beating in a unified fashion and pushing the blood from the top to the bottom. So if it's just quivering and not all the blood is being pushed down, some blood may hang out or stagnate, which makes it prone to forming a clot. If a clot forms in the heart and it beats it out, depending upon where it goes, puts you at risk. Obviously, the worst place a clot can go is to the brain, causing a stroke.
In terms of, and again, this is just me as a layperson, but I hear you say it's the top part of the heart. And if the top part of the heart isn't working as well as it should be or as it could be, does this also mean that the bottom part of the heart is then forced to work harder?
Correct. So the top part not beating is not the biggest plumbing problem in the world, because the work of the heart is done in the ventricle, the bottom part. However, when you're in atrial fibrillation, you have all that electrical chaos in the top, it gets transmitted to the bottom, and the bottom gets a lot of irregular, chaotic signals. So it doesn't work well. This, with atrial fibrillation, your heart tends to be very irregular. It can go fast, it can go slow, and some hearts don't respond well to that, and they don't start not to function as well. So the atrial fibrillation can actually induce a cardiomyopathy, meaning that the heart muscle can actually get weak with this rhythm problem.
Now, we're learning from you. It's an amazing clinic, a free clinic with Dr. C on atrial fibrillation. So we're learning what it is and the symptoms and what happens and all this. Do we know why? Maybe you've lived your life a certain number of years and either you didn't have it or you were asymptomatic. You didn't know you had it, but you had it. Do we know why people get atrial fibrillation?
So atrial fibrillation is the most common rhythm problem in the world. To be honest, almost 2% of the planet has this in some fashion or another. And for the most part, it tends to be age-related. So we start to see these rhythm disturbances sort of after the age of 40, you know, rarely. But then by the time we hit, you know, 70, 80 years of age, you know, it jumps up to as many as 20, 30% of patients have this problem.
Wow.
We know exactly where this problem comes from. It turns out that, you know, when the heart electrically developed, there were some, for want of a better term, some leftover electrical tissue that are in the veins of the lung that go to the heart. And as we get older, these abnormal tissues start to fire. And if they get out of those veins into the heart, that's what knocks the heart into atrial fibrillation.
So interesting. We're going to take our one and only time out during Dr. C's time with us here, and we love it. We have the privilege of presenting Dr. C about once a year, and it's always just fantastic. I hear a lot of great comments about Dr. C and the wonderful information that he imparts, and it does inspire folks who are listening that say, hey, wait a minute, you know, I think he's talking to me. And then what I want to encourage you to do, two ways to do this. You can do it with a digital device and do it at demand. Deborah.org, and you can start the process to seek an appointment, or you can call if you prefer, and people do it either way. If you want to call, you can dial 609-621-2080. DemandDeborah.org from any digital device, your smartphone, laptop, iPads, you know, the whole deal, any digital device that has access to the internet, DemandDeborah.org. Or phone 609-621-2080. The topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center presents Dr. Rafael Corbusiero, the Director of Electrophysiology and Pacing at Deborah Heart and Lung Center, is atrial fibrillation. This is one that I've heard people actually say to me, they don't like the cold because they just feel like this puts them and has an effect with AFib. We will see if that needs to be debunked, if that's true, because obviously you heard our meteorologist, Dan Zarro, just tell you that starting next week, it's going to be not single-digit cold, maybe wind chill, but teens. It's going to be cold. So the cold weather is here. The next question for Dr. C when we come back is, does cold weather affect AFib? I don't know the answer, but I know that Dr. C does, and he'll share it next. It's 23 minutes past the hour, visiting with our good friend, Dr. Rafael Corbusiero, Director of Electrophysiology and Pacing at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. Very, very experienced and terrific doctor. I mean, I so strongly encourage you, if you're dealing with anything that's within his areas of responsibility, to reach out and schedule an appointment. You'll be very, very pleased. Follow-up systems, competency, everything. Just terrific. DemandDeborah.org. You can make an appointment there or at 609-621-2080. 609-621-2080. The topic this half hour with Dr. C on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents is atrial fibrillation. Does cold weather, cliffhanger we left Dr. C, does cold weather affect AFib?
So extreme cold weather, think of it as a stress. And the stress of cold weather can actually make AFib worse. In fact, if you look at the data, the incidence of stroke with atrial fibrillation occurs more frequently in the winter than it does in the summer.
Very interesting, for the reasons mentioned. Mm-hmm. Now, you talked about how somebody could actually not even realize, if it's so subtle, you don't even realize that you're, you know, in AFib. How is AFib diagnosed?
So it may be related to the patient's symptoms, but if they don't have symptoms, then you're going to have to find it, on a routine follow-up when you see your doctor and he, you know, listens to your heart. He may not hear a regular heartbeat, or the patient has an EKG as a routine follow-up and it's diagnosed on the EKG. Obviously, if they're having a procedure, like their standard, you know, they're getting, you know, their you know, yearly scope or whatever, they may see on the monitor that the heart rate's not regular, and that's how they diagnose it.
And this is a very important part of your program. Talk about the types of treatments that are available.
So when you have atrial fibrillation, the treatment is always, the strategy is twofold. So one, you want to treat the rhythm problem. The treatment for the rhythm problem has the same arms. You can use medications, you can use pacemakers, and then the ablation is really the procedure that's sort of growing the most frequently. The other arm of the treatment, right, with atrial fibrillation is we have to assess your risk for clot formation and stroke, in which case we have to protect you. Most of the time with protection, there's the use of blood thinners to prevent the clot, but we have other ways to protect you that we can talk about in just a minute.
Okay, I was going to follow up, but we're going to talk about it in just a little bit. How about this? Will coffee, tea, so obviously caffeinated drinks, energy drinks, does this have any type of adverse effect with AFib?
Yeah. So overdoing it with caffeine or, these energy drinks can actually increase palpitations and atrial fibrillation. Some people aren't affected, and, you know, I always tell my patients, if you need a cup of coffee in the morning, usually that's fine. But usually, as with everything, you know, if it's done excessively, it could cause a problem.
If you can, and some people can, that don't have a drop of caffeine, maybe they grab chocolate or something and don't realize that they might, you know, get some caffeine like that. But if you can abstain from caffeine altogether, would that be good?
It certainly would help. The thing with atrial fibrillation is it's very common and it's related to many things. But we know that a good lifestyle helps with atrial fibrillation. So exercise, you know, keeping your weight down, keeping your blood pressure under control, keeping your sugar under control if you have diabetes, all these things, you know, are a factor into helping atrial fibrillation.
I know I brought up early in the interview the bonus question, is atrial fibrillation curable or treatable? And you addressed it. I want to bring it up sort of with different language. Is AFib reversible?
So it typically not, unless, of course, there's a specific trigger to the atrial fibrillation. So let's say you don't have a diagnosis of atrial fibrillation and you undergo open heart surgery, or you have a bad pneumonia, especially COVID. If that is the only thing that triggered the AFib and you treat that with open heart surgery or you treat the COVID infection, then it may be reversible if that's the only thing that triggered it.
Did you see a lot of effect from COVID-19 where people did wind up having things that they otherwise would not have had happen?
Yes. We're going to continue to learn that with COVID, there are going to be cardiac manifestations down the line. But like any pneumonia, you see an increase in atrial fibrillation.
Now, I know you talked a bit about this, but I'm going to make it a standalone question. What lifestyle changes can one make to help control their condition?
So usually it's the things that we all know. A good exercise program, you know, reduction in stress, weight control, blood pressure, sugar control, all these things can help with your atrial fibrillation. Avoiding certain triggers with foods, if they do bother you, coffee, tea, energy drinks, licorice, you know, chocolate, things like that.
And can things be done to prevent it?
Yes. So if the diagnosis of atrial fibrillation is made and we get to it early, and what I mean by early is – Usually, once atrial fibrillation is diagnosed, you know, you have about a year to kind of make the decision on if you want to be aggressive with rhythm control. And if you're going to be, aggressive and trying to prevent further episodes, in my opinion, as much of the data would agree, the best treatment is to have the ablation try to prevent the further recurrences of atrial fibrillation.
And that can make it actually that the symptoms no longer exist?
Yes. It's not a cure because atrial fibrillation is so common, but it does a very good job at least delaying the progress of atrial fibrillation.
Do you I don't know what the answer is to this. I don't know if there is an answer to this, but I'm going to throw it out there just for fun and giggles because you're the best. Were you predetermined that you will have it, but you don't know it when you're a toddler, when you're a young person, and then it then happens at age 50 or something, 60, whatever, 40s? Is it something you are always going to have and it presents at a later point in your life, or is it something different than that?
No, I think it's more related to, you know, the risk factors that we develop along the way. So, you know, obviously there's nothing we can do about getting older, but, I mean, as stated, if you have poor sleep habits or sleep apnea, if your hypertension is poorly controlled, these are the things that are going to bring it out.
To make an appointment, you can do it digitally, demanddebora.org, or you can call 609-621-2080, 609-621-2080. We are visiting for the next 4 or 5 minutes with Dr. Rafael Corbisiero, who is the director of electrophysiology and pacing at DeBora Heart and Lung Center. We've done a lot of television and radio together, Dr. C. We have shown your viewers and told your listeners about the different devices and things. Over the past 25 years, there have been incredible advances in all of this stuff, hasn't there?
Mm-hmm, yes. And the thing that I like to emphasize from what we do is, you know, we try to take what's called a non-pharmacological approach towards some of the issues with the heart. So if we can do a procedure like an ablation for atrial fibrillation, that may save, from the side effects of drugs that people will have to be on for a long period of time. And if we could avoid that, to me, that's a big benefit. If we can take care of it with a procedure and avoid medications, to me, that's a true benefit.
There's no doubt about it. I was just thinking about a closing question that'll give you an opportunity to make a closing comment on today's topic. After that, we've got about 3-4 minutes with Dr. C. If you told someone today that, you know, you have atrial fibrillation, I think that, I mean, everybody's different, but people would get scared. They would wonder, does this mean, you know, that they're not going to live as long as they had hoped and things like that. When you deliver this kind of news, you know, what would you say people should think if they learn that they have atrial fibrillation?
So first thing is atrial fibrillation is a treatable problem, and we want to treat it as aggressively as possible so it doesn't affect anything for you down the line with your prognosis. Okay, so it is a treatable problem. That's what I want to, you know, get across. I mean, I think in this day and age, to be honest, I think the patients are actually figuring this out.
Yeah.
You know, one of the large trials that was done that looked at, you know, drugs versus the ablation therapy, in that trial, the trial was difficult to run because so many of the patients researched it and wanted to have the ablation and not to be put on drugs.
They came in predetermined.
So I tell my colleagues all the time, when patients figure things out, we should start to listen.
Very good. Now, would anybody that hears that news expect that their longevity is affected, or just this is something that they're going to need to manage for the rest of their life?
If treated well, it's something that's just we have to manage for the rest of their life. If it's treated well, it should not affect their long-term prognosis.
Is there heredity as a factor in atrial fibrillation?
It's possible that there are rare cases of familial atrial fibrillation, but for the most part, no.
And when you either experience some kind of symptom it's one thing if you don't know. You don't know what you don't know. And if you go through and then you find out at a point in time where you had no symptoms, it's a wonderful, you know, probably early detection scenario that you were talking about. But if you're feeling something, somebody listening right now is feeling certain symptoms, and people know, like when you have palpitations or something, you feel that fluttering, you know something's happening. So if you know something's happening, making the call, 609-621-2080, or digitally requesting an appointment. There's a hyperlink. You can't miss it. When you go on to demanddebora.org, you'll see it right there. I believe it's a red speed button block. You can't miss it. You make the appointment right there digitally as well, and then the team will get in touch with you. It's really important to not sit back and do nothing, isn't it?
Yes. And for rhythm disturbances, I would especially encourage them to see the specialist with rhythms. That's the electrophysiology division.
There you go.
Not just the cardiologist.
Yeah, there you go. Very important. 609-621-2080, demanddebora.org. Dr. C, a closing comment. It's time to say goodbye, but a closing comment from you on today's topic.
Atrial fibrillation is a very common problem. It needs to be treated aggressively when we first find out about it. It's not something that you should let your doctor tell you that you can live with it and it's not too bad. We should treat it aggressively so you do better down the line.
DemandDebora.org, 609-621-2080. We've been visiting with Dr. Rafael Corbaciero. He's awesome, the director of electrophysiology and pacing at DeBora Heart and Lung Center. It just flew by in the blink of an eye. Thanks for your time and your expertise, doctor.
Thank you, Harry. As always, good to talk to you.
Honor to be with you, doctor.